Thursday morning, actually, I got the idea of that I should speak on his workmanship. And that's because, you know, I'm 50 something years old, almost 60, and I've been through many religious systems. I've been in the Baptist systems, Adventist Church of God. I've been in the Messianic movement, and I just see schisms and schisms and schisms as I go along, especially within, what we call Hebrew roots movements and things like that. Then it dawned on me that one of the problems that I've noticed is that the schisms come from people wanting, or leaders wanting, to do their own thing rather than doing what is already prescribed for us in the scriptures. So that's one of the problems. That's not the only problem, but that's the problem I want to try to address today. And I pray, my hope as I was praying, is that this will get us to think about evaluating what it is we're doing in terms of ministry, how we're doing it, and to make sure it's the work that Elohim is doing, and then we're not doing something of our own. Okay? So today we find numerous individuals and organizations. They're claiming to be ministers. They're claiming to be quote unquote Christian. Some call themselves Nazarene, assemblies, or congregations, and along with a spectrum of denominations. Whatever the terminology of choice, they all claim to be serving the one Elohim. Yet too often they serve according to their own ideologies, not necessarily what Elohim requires. Okay? So as a result, we find a world filled with a spectrum, again, of various denominations and organizations doing what? Causing confusion, division, contradicting scriptural faith, doing harm rather than the good intended. Yet in Ephesians chapter 2, verses 9, what do we find there? We read, "For we are his workmanship, created in the elect one, Yehoshua, unto good works, which Elohim hath before ordained that we should walk in them." So this passage provides the context and directions for us who are seeking and doing all we can to serve Elohim in spirit and in truth. And the text references we and his and the word workmanship. We need to understand in the context of the entire chapter and some other parts of scriptures, we need to understand what is the we, what is the his, what is the workmanship. It says we are his workmanship. So in the time left over, I will review this passage in context of the entire chapter and parts of 1 Corinthians chapter 3 to provide some understanding of what Elohim wants his people to be and do circumspectly. Not any old way, not letting our personalities get in the way, our way of doing things. Just thinking back of the Levitical priests. We know how exact they needed to be in their service. So there's a principle there shown to us in the law that when those of us that are serving Elohim have to do it with a great sense of reverence, genuine reverence, and it has to be according to what he said, not what we think or what we feel. Look in the Torah, you will see that's not acceptable. For instance, one time in the time of Judges, Eli, the priest that was mentoring or teaching Samuel when Samuel was a child, his service wasn't acceptable, definitely not his children. And when you look at what happened, how he died, how his sons died, it's telling us that his service wasn't acceptable. And you see how he compromised. And when we looked at his compromise, it wasn't even him directly, it was more his sons. But he still allowed his sons to serve, although he knew his sons were doing awful things. So, and his sons died and he ended up dying. And we see, this type of warning in the scriptures. We even see it with Moses. I like to think about this a lot when I think about serving Elohim. He was in Midian, living about 40 years there. Then he was told he needed to go to Egypt. But what happened? He, having wed, had a son. He was on his way, giving up, leaving his family, making this great sacrifice of going back to Egypt. But we find that he was about to be killed. I'm not going to go into the particulars there, but he was about to be killed because then what happened? Zipporah, daughter of the priest of Reuel or Jethro, circumcised the child. And that spared Moses' life. This was why Moses was about to be killed, about his child not being circumcised. You see how careful we need to be in our ministry. And Yeshua warned those who would be servants to be very careful. And the principles of the law, even though we're not Levitical priests, we need to apply in our ministry. We have to have that understanding that Elohim expects the best of us. So with that said, let's go back to Ephesians and let's read from verse 2-3. So let me bring this verse here so I could read it. So it says, in which you once walked according to, let me read verse 1 first. Let me reread verse 1 so I didn't lose track of what I'm doing. Move using a laptop here. Okay, here we go. So it says, dead, verse 1-3, it says, dead in trespasses of sin. So to start, we read the entire chapter. When we read the entire chapter, we learn the following. Verse 1 of through chapter 3 says that it addresses people who were quote unquote dead in trespasses and sins and provides some descriptions of, but they were dead. Notice it is both trespasses and sins, not one or the other. It's both. Why do we see this distinction? Again, we're trying to understand how we must serve. Trespasses is from the Greek word narapoma, right? There could be variations of that throughout the scriptures, but in general, it's narapoma, which means to fall beside or near something or have a lapse or to deviate from truth and uprightness. In brief, it's to fall short of doing what's right. That's what the trespass means. In this case, that word, narapoma, is telling you, is in a sense, you're trying to do what's right, but you fall short. You're near it, but you missed. The next word is the word for sins is harmatia. Hope I'm harmatia. I'm not a Greek expert, but harmatia. You could look those words up in your concordance. But it means to miss or wander from the path of uprightness and honor. In brief, to do or go wrong entirely. It's not like a trespass there. You're not trying to do. In this case, this sin here is not referring to someone who's trying to do right but fails. But this is someone who's choosing to sin. That's what they know, and that's what they do. So the problem that caused those people to be once dead were their failures to do what was right and the outright acts of evil they used to commit. And I say used to commit because that was their past. When you read the chapter, as Paul is speaking, he said, you were those things, but not anymore. You were dead. They were dead. So it's because of what their failure to do what's right, their trespasses, and their outright sins. So here is the description from verse 2-3. The hardest part of this for me is navigating my screen here. Okay. So it says, in which you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience, among whom also we all once conducted ourselves in the lust of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, just as the others. So quickly, I don't have that much time, but look, it says, in which you once were, and I'm speaking specifically of the people in the past. I'm not speaking to necessarily us, we who are here, but we need to see how any of this applies to us, where we are in our walk. They walk once according to the course of this world, the way of this world that we're not to love. For the love of the Father is not with those, I'm paraphrasing, who love the things of the world. We're not to love the things of the world. But they were once living in the worldly way. And the world is according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience, even back then and still today. still working in the sons of disobedience, who works in them the way of the world. Has the way of the world crept into how we think about ministry? Is it possible that some may be trying to minister in the way that they've seen the world serve in a way? He says, among whom, verse 3, among whom also we also once conducted ourselves in the lust of our flesh. Are we, one person, one of our sisters prayed for us last night that whatever we do, we don't do it for any personal ambition to fulfill the desires of the flesh and of the mind. Is our mind, did we put on the mind of Messiah so that we have in mind what he has in mind, not our own mind? Not inadvertently using techniques that are in the world to fulfill things that are in the world, the way the world works, and we're trying to incorporate that in our ministries to work out good. We're not to do that. Mind we should have is the mind of Messiah by the Spirit. And we're by nature children of wrath just as the others. So today we see the same situation where people are failing to do the right they know, and others who are doing misdeeds, in other words, sins, those who are trespassing and those that are outrightly sinning. Sadly then, all who are doing any of the above are dead or unfruitful in life-giving and sustaining righteousness per the standards of Elohim. See, these type of behaviors in verse 2 and 3 causes a person to be dead. And that is not what Elohim wills for anyone. Yet wonderfully, there are solutions in this passage that applies to all, even those of us today, or anyone today who may be dead in trespasses and sins. Okay, so that's the we. And when I say the we, I'm talking about the we again in the text. It says we were once. So when Paul was speaking about the we, he was speaking of those who used to do those things. So the we in the scriptures are those of us who no longer do those things. We no longer operate like that. But it says his workmanship. We are his workmanship. Who is the his? His who? Well, next we learn from verse 4 that Elohim, who is rich in mercy because of his great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in trespasses, made us alive together with the elect one. By grace you are saved. So Elohim offers mercy, as we see in the passage. Why should we value such a mercy? Maybe we feel we don't need it. I've been doing this for years. I've been serving Elohim for years. Why? Well, Elohim is the first, or the Rishon, or Alpha. Rishon is the Hebrew word for the first, and Alpha, of course, is the Greek word for the first. He is the first reality. We have to keep that in mind. We're not the author of our own salvation. It's not really in us to have the power. If it was, the world's problems would have been solved a long time ago. We wouldn't be in the state that we are. We have all these divisive groups preaching one thing with all sorts of title. Each group has one particular name for its organization. They chart their own course. They're doing their own thing. If they understood that we are who the his is in the workmanship statement, his workmanship, whose is it? Is it the seminaries? Is it his? Is it some great earthly teacher? No, it's Elohim. And Elohim, the scriptures tells us he is the first. He's of himself actually says that. He says, is the Rishon or Alpha. He's the first reality and the only one that literally exists without a beginning and can never end. He's the only one. That's the one where that's providing, that's doing the work. In the Old and New Testament scriptures, he is termed the Rishon and the Aharon, or in the Greek, Alpha and Omega, respectively. Rishon is a Hebrew word that can be used to denote the first or primary one or thing or reality, while Aharon is commonly translated as the end. Yet, in context with Elohim's nature, Aharon is better understood as the always or the ever. And the Hebrew experts out there, you can look into this and verify this. Or something continuous or unending. The Greek terms Alpha and Omega convey the same things. Alpha being the first and Omega being the, sometimes translated the end, but meaning also completion. Something that's complete, commonly rendered the end. So that's the nature That's the he. That's the his work. That's the person being identified when it says his. There are about three Old Testament passages where Elohim reveals that he is the first and the always. And I'm saying this for a reason. The first one is in Isaiah 41 verses 4, quote, who has performed and done it, calling the generations from the beginning? I am the eternal, or Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. I'm the first, and with the last, I am he. The second passage is found in Isaiah 44 verse 6. Again, it's Elohim. Thus says the eternal one, the King of Israel and his Redeemer, the Eternal of Hosts. I am the first and I am the last. Besides me, there is no Elohim. And the third one is Isaiah 48 verses 12. It says, listen to me, O Jacob and Israel, my call. I am he. I am the first. I am also the last. So doesn't it imply that Elohim wants us to kind of hone in on this a little bit? Because for some reason he wanted, through Isaiah, he wanted Israel to get this into their heads. We're not the ones in charge. He is. And we must make sure that whatever we're doing in his name is according to his will, the way he said to do it, not charting our own course, our own ideas. Thus, the Elohim, or Theos, as presented in the Greek, is the one absolute first reality, who is the ever, that can never end. The testimony of the three passages in Isaiah, as I said, not to mention those in the book of Revelation, shows that it is very important for us to know he is the first and the always. He is the eternal, which is also what his name, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, is conveying. And so we can know our place in the ministry, and we're not the head. He is. That we should not be charting our own course. We should not be planning what we are going to do for Elohim, but we should be humbly sitting, asking, what shall I do for you? According to what is written, what he foreordained, not creating some new thing to do, which keeps failing and failing and failing. But if we stick to what he told us to do, what he foreordained for us to do, and understand that's the mission he has called his called ones, his servants, his congregation to do, then we will find ourselves succeeding because he will be with us. Or I should say we will be with him because he is where he is. But over the course, many have deviated. We need to make sure we're on course and staying on course. So this understanding that Elohim wanted Israel to have it, he's in charge. He's the first. There's no one. He's the Elohim, no other. Things are to be done his way. This is the ultimate reason we can trust Elohim and receive so great a salvation. Because besides being endless in time, this most unique living authority, power, Elohim that we serve, we know he's infinite in magnitude. We know he is uncontained, having no boundaries, yet containing in himself the cosmos and everything that exists. Elohim doesn't need anything from us. We're not doing him a favor. He doesn't need to breathe. He doesn't need to eat. He doesn't consume any energy or any substance. He doesn't need those things. He contains all things. He provides all things. He, Elohim, is the source and sanctuary of all wisdom, knowledge, power, virtues, and life. He is not like a human being that needs to be given ideas. He doesn't need any counselors, as he knocks as though thousands upon millions and millions are thousands of thousands of heavenly beings are before him. He receives counsel from none of them. He needs none. And this is why in the scriptures you'll see he's described as the All. He's the All. Elohim alone has the rightful holy name. He has a name that people are fighting over, which is not, again, another source. They are deceived into fighting over how to pronounce his name. In the Hebrew, spelled that as Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh or Yud-Heh-Wah-Heh, right? And in the Greek, we find a similar thing. The Erkorman, right? Which convey the same thing. He alone was, is, and will be. It's not us to make a name. For him is the glory. For him is the power. Are we working for it to be so? Or do we work to make a name for ourselves? I don't get that impression from any of us, but there are many others that are. And we can hopefully be an example of serving him in spirit and in truth. Verse 5 says of Ephesians chapter 2, even when we were dead in trespasses, made us alive together with the elect one. By grace you have been saved, and raised us up together and made us sit together in the heavenly places in the elect Yeshua. So he raised us up together. So already it has a sense of unity there. He didn't raise us to be apart, to do our own thing, but raise us up together and made us, we sit together in the heavenly places in the elect Yeshua. Verse 7 says that in the ages to come, now this is speaking in the time of Ephesians, right? In the ages to come, from that time when Paul was speaking, so in the ages to come, he might show the exceeding riches of his grace and his kindness towards us in the elect one Yeshua. So the Ephesians, Paul, at the time of Ephesians and all the apostles, they had an expectation that in their future, that while we do all those things properly that are listed in verse 6 and before, we might in the ages to come experience his exceeding riches of his grace and his kindness towards us in the elect one, Yeshua. For by grace you have been saved through faith, and that not of yourself. It is the gift of Elohim, not of works, lest anyone should boast. So this salvation is not a matter of saying, well, I go to church or I go to congregation, I go to shul or whatever. It's a matter of really being written down in the book of life. It's a matter of being in his hands for real. You cannot lose that salvation once you're saved. The question is, are individuals who say they are saved, saved? But once you are saved, you're just that. You're not saved and then not saved. He foreknew, he predestinated to be. So the ones he called saved, he recognized saved, are the ones he knows will enter. The ones who will hear, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Those are the ones who are saved. It's not those that are walking around saying, speaking religious lingo or going to services necessarily or doing whatever. No, it's those that he knows. It's those that he knows. And how can we know? Just do his will, because he's faithful. He says, if you do my commandments, right? So if you find yourself living obediently, lovingly, doing those things that Elohim says, then you know you aren't there. If you're not doing those things, you know you are not yet there. I love that word yet, because when I think of the sinner, people that are living in sin, when I say yet, you can still be saved. This message may not be for, in a sense, that salvation, but we have to explain this to the people. So many are fighting over salvation. Everything becomes a fighting issue. We're saved. We're not saved. We can lose our, you cannot lose your salvation. That is silly. It's where a person is either saved or you're not saved. Simple as that. So we read the description of the conditions of the sins and what Elohim did through his son to save us, to save them, why they were no longer dead in trespasses. So what is the, but then we read about a workmanship, which is the title, his workmanship. What is this workmanship? Well, this is a fail-proof salvation, which no one has a reasonable cause to fail to receive. There's no excuse not to be saved, really. None. This great Elohim worked everything out for us by his son, the elect one, and his spirit of joy and truth. We must not add or detract from it at all. So when we're doing our ministry, we must make sure that that ministry, whatever, however it is something that Elohim established through his son. And we're working it out in him, as he says, works that he foreordained that we should walk in them. Now, let us appreciate and respect the value of his work for us and in us. Ephesians chapter 2 verse 10 states, oops, let me turn back up there so I can see Ephesians, so I can read it for you. Okay. For we are his workmanship created in the elect one, the Messiah Yeshua, for good works, which Elohim prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. So clearly it's not for us to create or perform our own agenda, this or that ministry. He prepared beforehand what we should be focusing on and doing. His work will not fail. Our work, our efforts will not fail if we're doing what he says. But if we're trying to do our own thing, that's disconnected, that's not unified, where there's no communication going on, no one knows really what the other is doing. We're not functioning as a body. We're disjointed. We're here. We're there. We're, you know, we don't know anybody, then something's wrong. That's not how Elohim operated. And we have that example throughout the New Testament and Old Testament. We see how people communicated. We saw how Jethro somehow knew where to find Moses by the spirit of Elohim. He helped Moses in the desert. We found how Aaron found Moses before that. We see how the congregations of Elohim in Corinth and all the different places, although they didn't have telephone, internet, motorized vehicles, they were able to stay connected. They knew who was who. They knew who to touch base in. They knew who was doing what. They were a single unit all over the earth. They did not consider them separate ministries, separate organizations. They recognized it as like one organization with many parts of that one body, and all of them intricately connected together. If look how they could function back then, and yet we today, with all the technology we have, we don't know what's going on. We're so divided, and this is not the will of Elohim. Let me try to move along here. So remember that Elohim is the one who started this work. From the very beginning, he created the heavens and the earth. Two major things, according to the consensus of scripture, of the scriptures. Two major infrastructures. The expanses, the heavens and the earth. The bottom. Heavens, the upper, the earth, the bottom. Elohim created these by his word and spirit, which are termed his everlasting arms, to create all these things so that he could create, have a family. A family. And we use the word family. I use the word family because I can't think of a better word. But he wants his a people to love and to love him. A people to interact with, him, to share with. So he created the angels, the B'nai Elohim, the sons of Elohim. And he created Adam, the earthly family. And all by covenant. All, whether in heaven and earth, it's by covenant. The entire creation was accomplished by his spirit and logos and sustained within the logos. Thus, he is the father, as the scripture, he is the father of spirits, of lights, and every family in heaven on earth. Notice, family in heaven and on earth. So the angels are his children. That's what they call the B'nai, the sons of Elohim. And we are given that same privilege to become, to be his children. Because that's what all this work, everything that Paul said in the first prior verses in Ephesians, that's what all the scriptures is about. The making, the gathering, the formation, the unifying of Elohim's children. That's what his plan is all. That's why he created, to have a family. We deviated from that. Mankind sinned, and many angels sinned, and the problems started from there. But his project, his plan has everything needed so that no matter what happens, no matter what sin, what good, no matter what happens, in the end, Elohim will have his family. His project has worked that out. Our job is to make sure we're part of that project, not creating our own project. We need to be a part of that project to gather his children. That's what it is, to turn people from sin and into the knowledge of Elohim through his son, so they could be, so they could receive his spirit. For Elohim, who is now the all, as I mentioned, will become the all in all. That's why he's having this family, the family above, the family below, to one day be one. His purpose for creation, again, all this is being done by covenant with all the sentient beings, because who will agree? Again, by covenant. He's not going to force, for he is love, and he is producing a loving and willing family, not coerced beings or automatons, not robots. This is the workmanship he is accomplishing. Are we doing it? Are we doing something else? So verses 13, 11 to 13, it speaks about how Elohim drew people who were hopeless strangers, as well as those who knew about him, to himself by his son. So both Gentiles and Israelites, he drew to himself by his son. Verses 14 to 15 proclaims that Messiah is the giver and source of peace for Israelites and all nations. And quote, so as to create in himself one new man or new person from the two, thus making peace. Notice, he is making one new person, not changing nations to Jews or Jews to nations. No, he's not making the old. He's making a new person. New person? Yes, a new person. As Yeshua says, equal to the angels, not mere mortal, fallible Israelites or any other type to become like his son. So many are creating so much confusion and division, claiming or boasting about their human heritage. This just causes confusion. The faith is not about human heritage. It's about becoming the sons of Elohim, to become his family, his workmanship, the one new humanity, the one new person in Messiah. Verse 16 to 18 tells us that besides changing all people into one new person, he will reconcile all of them to himself as their father in his son by his spirit. That's what our work has to be focused on. That making sure that whatever we're doing is that, the ministry of reconciliation. He will reconcile all of them to himself as their father in his son by his one spirit. We need to focus on his work, brethren, for his workmanship is flawlessly great and complete. It's perfect. There's nothing to be added to. There's nothing to add to or take away from. Verse 19 to 22 tell us, now, therefore, you are no longer strangers and foreigners, all fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of Elohim, having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Yeshua, the elect one himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom the whole building being fitted together grows into a holy temple in the sovereign, in whom you also are being built together for a dwelling place of Elohim in the spirit, not in the flesh, any perishable thing. So that's what our ministries have to be about. Whatever it is, let's make sure it's aligned with this, that we are his workmanship, that we are indeed, that we're not something else, that we're not like Eli, that the servants of Elohim don't need to contend with Baal. Baal, they were trying to set up another type of work in the Elijah's time, claiming that this is the way to go, but it wasn't. And through, by the Spirit, Elohim moved Elijah to draw his people together. Why stand you divided here between two ideas? Today we're divided over many ideas, but we could overcome that. Go back to the ancient paths according to the covenants. Go back. Understand that our job, what he is doing, he's built in whom? The whole building, that's Yehoshua, in whom? In him. The whole building being built together grows into a holy temple in the sovereign, in whom you also are being built together for a dwelling place of Elohim in the spirit. So here in the scriptures, we see something about a tower, a building, a structure. In Ezra, 2nd Ezra, you read that. In Enoch, you read about a building. In the Shepherd of Hermas, you read a map of the church. Shepherd of Hermas is focused on the purity, maintaining the purity of that tower, the building that he is building. So we're about to conclude. And I'll read this because I think it speaks to itself, and I'll make closing remarks. So another similar passage is found in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 9 through 17, which states, "For we are Elohim's fellow workers." Wow. "For we are Elohim's fellow workers." You are Elohim's field. You are Elohim's building according to the grace, according to the gift of Elohim, which was given to me. That's Paul speaking. "As a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation and another builds on it. But let each one take heed how he builds on it." So maybe we feel we are doing the right thing. Let's be circumspect. Let's make sure we're doing the right thing. Right, according to the scriptures, not according to our own thinking. Verse 11 of that portion of Corinthians says, "For no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Yahushua, the elect one, the Messiah. Now, if anyone builds on this foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw, each one's work will become clear, will manifest, for the day will declare it, because it will be revealed by fire, and the fire will test each one's work of what sort it is." Continue. Now, verse 14, "If anyone's work which he has built on it endures, he will receive a reward. If anyone's work is burned, he will suffer loss. But he himself will be saved, yet as through fire." It's not going to be an easy salvation. It has to be an accounting for the sins. "For we will give an account for every word let alone our actions. So it'll be through fire. It's not going to be an easy if we are trying to do it right and we trespass. In other words, we're trying, but we did it wrong. We mustn't, and we definitely mustn't sin. So do you know that you are the temple of Elohim and that the spirit, the Ruach of Elohim dwells in you? If anyone defiles the temple of Elohim, Elohim will destroy him. For the temple of Elohim is holy, which temple you are. Okay, so there's one building, one structure, and all these divisive constructs, this name. See, in the world is competitive. So if people are going to open a restaurant, they'll have their own name, that name, this name, that name, whatever business. That's how they operate. And we see this evil, this system is competitive, has entered into the congregations, into the soul, where they have different names. Then they start having different doctrines. Then they start either overdoing the scriptures or relaxing the scriptures, which thing none are acceptable. We are to proclaim the word just as it is, not adding or taking away from it. But we see all of this, these different names and all these things. We are not to do that. Elohim is in charge. And throughout the scriptures, he has given his work a name. He has given his organization a name. Whether we say Ecclesias Theos or Kahal Elohim, or congregation of Elohim, assembly of Elohim, assembly of the power. However you want to translate that, but we need to, whatever we're going to call ourselves should be a translation of what he says. A respectful, proper translation. Because we are representing him, his workmanship. Let's conclude. This is the wonderful promised future for those who stay grounded in him by sincerely repenting of all sin, believing such good news, being baptized, and keeping our baptism pure so we may receive the seal of his Holy Spirit from his son, Yahushua. Important to keep in mind is that Yahushua, the elect one, is the builder and only head of those in Elohim's hand. He said, I will build my congregation and the gates of hell will not prevail against it, in Matthew 6, recorded in Matthew 16 verses 18. Let us not forget that and do foolishly to build our own groups and organizations with all sorts of names. As stated in the introduction, there are numerous groups and organizations forging their own organizations, causing confusion, division, contradicting that truth and most holy faith once delivered to the saints. Let us repent. I know my hands were in that years ago, but I've turned from that. And I'm trusting all of you have, but we're not perfect. We could always do better. Let's believe. Let's make sure those that are coming are baptized. And they have, and that they're red, keeping their baptism pure to receive the Holy Spirit. For only those who are what he, Yahushua, is building are in the Father's hand for everlasting life. All else are rejected and will eventually be destroyed by him, as we read. Elohim will indeed do all that he has purposed to do. Let us then join him in his wonderful purpose and work of righteousness and life through Yeshua, his son. As stated in 1 Corinthians 15, verses 58, there, my beloved brethren, therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the sovereign, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the sovereign. Thank you for listening.